As I talk this morning, there are several points that I hope that you will notice in the things that we'll discuss. One, blessing is not an automatic benefit of belonging to a certain family or tribe or people group of any type. It is bestowed and it is chosen. God is glad to bless, but you can be blessed only as you choose to bless others. Anything else is actually a curse. So Jabez was more honorable. You know, it didn't seem that way to start with. His birth was apparently a complicated one. We don't know how. Maybe he was breech, or maybe he was an extra large baby, or in some way, his birth was more difficult than normal. And because of it, his mom suffered a lot of pain. And she named him Jabez, which means sorrow, affliction, pain. It's kind of like the name Dolores. I never knew what Dolores meant until I started studying Spanish from a woman named Dolores. And when I realized what her name meant, I was appalled. Dolores means pains. How can a person name their child pain? You're a pain in the neck. I could not believe how people, I don't understand how people can do that. But that was the name that Jabez had. Do you remember another baby named for the difficult delivery experienced by mom? Benjamin. Actually, yes, Benjamin. His it's told about in Genesis 35, verses 16 to 18. It says, then they journeyed from Bethel, and when there was but a little distance to go to Ephrath, Rachel labored in childbirth, and she had hard labor. Now it came to pass, when she was in hard labor, that the midwife said to her, do not fear, you will have this son also. And so it was, as her soul was departing, for she died, that she called him Benoni, but his father called him Benjamin. Benoni means son of my sorrow. Rachel realized she was dying. She had finally conceived a second, very longed-for son. But now, after years of long waiting to conceive, and after a very difficult labor process, she realized she'd never be able to raise this baby. She knew she was dying. I can hardly imagine anything that would grieve as much as that. But in the case of Benjamin, after mom passed away, dad renamed the baby. Have you ever thought about why he might have done that? Do you remember what Jacob means? Heel grabber. Heel grabber, as in deceiver. Kind of a more serious take on what we say when someone's giving us a bad time. Quit pulling my leg. Heel grabber was deceiver. How would you like to go through life being called deceit or deceiver? Besides, of course, as we've discussed in other times, in other contexts, in the Middle East, the culture is such that it is only the lowest of the low that touch a person's feet, touch someone else's feet. So if you went through life being called heel grabber, where does that place you? And if you're being called deceiver or deceit, what does that say about your character? It was only natural for Jacob to go along with his mother when she suggested that he deceive his father into giving him the blessing. That's who he was, after all. And while he felt very bad at having to leave his family home, and I'm sure he felt great guilt over what had gone on, it was only after about 20 years of being far away and realizing that he would never again see his mother that had loved him so much, 20 years of having this guilty conscience, that he realized how very wrong his method was. He had been horribly cursed with a name that had affected his entire life, and now he refused to traumatize his own son with the same kind of thing. So instead of calling him Son of My Sorrow, Benjamin gave him a different name. He called him Benjamin, which means Son of My Right Hand. Jacob was called Deceiver. Benjamin, Son of My Right Hand. The right hand is the most trusted. Deceit and trust. A very difficult outcome in a person's life as well. So Jacob changed Benjamin's history, but nobody was doing that for Jabez. It's interesting to notice that the only two men in the Bible who begged for God's blessing were the two who were named basically for curses. If you ever sit down and look up Bible names and what they mean, you'll see that over and over and over, people were named for some aspect of a relationship with God, or for the blessing that they are, or some wonderful thing. But these two men were not, Jacob and Jabez. And they both begged for God's blessing. Nobody else seemed to seriously question whether or not they were blessed. If you've got a good name, you must be an okay person, right? So, let's see here. I'm sorry, I lost my place. I'm not used to talking off of a computer. I admire Lauren for doing that all the time. I'm not used to trying to depend on it, and when it jumps screens a little bit on me. And there, it did it again. Sorry. When Jacob, shortly before Benjamin was born, remember Jacob, they were on their way home, and Jacob felt very threatened by his brother. He separated his family out into two groups and sent them on ahead, and he stayed back, remember, to pray. And he wrestled with God all night, insisting on a blessing. He would not let God go until he was blessed. And do you notice that God gave him a new name at that point? He was no longer named Deceiver, or Heel Grabber, however you want to say it, that all means the same thing. Jacob got a new name. He was blessed. Jews have historically put a lot of emphasis on blessing their children. Friday night has become a traditional night for blessing them. In fact, you might remember the Sabbath prayer in the movie Fiddler on the Roof. Let's see that.
Protect and defend you. May he always shield you from shame. May you come to be in Israel a shining name. May you be like Ruth and like Esther. May you be deserving of praise. Strengthen them, O Lord, and keep them from the stranger's ways.
May God bless you and grant you long life.
May the Lord fulfill our Sabbath prayer for you. May God make you good mothers and
may
wives.
May He send you husbands who will care for you. May the Lord protect and defend.
May the Lord protect and defend.
May the Lord preserve.
The importance of blessing. And so when Jacob lost his most loved wife, rather than honoring her by keeping the name she gave, he chose to bless his son and give him a good life. But Jabez's father somehow was different. He did not change Jabez's name. And Jabez grew up constantly being called painmaker, the one who causes pain. What couldn't playmates or rival siblings do with a name like that to make you feel inadequate and horrible, to cause you pain? Who would have blamed him if he had grown up to be some kind of a barbaric abuser or fighter, conqueror, whatever, murderer? He could have grown up to be any kind of a horrible man, believing that that was his destiny, to cause pain. There's a concept that's known in virtually every culture. Nowadays, around here in our culture, people call it karma, from Hindu beliefs. Jabez had caused his mom pain. So now it was projected that he would live a life of pain. You know, like you give what you get, or you sow what you reap. What goes around comes around. What goes up must come down. And do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Jabez didn't try to contradict that concept. He just wanted to participate in a new way. He hated his name, and he did not wish its prophecy to be fulfilled in his life. He didn't want to cause pain. He didn't exactly want to live a life of pain. He preferred it not come to him, and he didn't like his name. Did you ever not like your name? Did you even wonder where you got it? I was born on my great-grandmother's birthday. Lydia Odell was the favorite grandmother for all of us cousins. She was a sweet, sweet little lady who loved much. But nowadays, Lydia is considered a pretty name, but when I was a child, it was considered very ugly and old-fashioned, and I was thrilled that my parents did not name me Lydia in spite of the family pressure to do that. Born on her name, she got to carry her name. I'm born on her date, got to carry her name, and my parents refused. I've always been thankful for that. But with the disapproval of not giving me Lydia as a name, came a lot of pressure, so much so that after I was actually home from the hospital, my parents gave in, went back, and changed my birth certificate when I was a few days old. I had been named Patrice. Actually, that's a very nice name, noble, patrician, but grandma, a different grandma, Grandma Hazel, Grandma Odell's daughter, did not like that. So my parents went back and renamed me, but they named me Pamela instead of Lydia. Well, Pamela means sweet as honey, and some of you might not quite agree with the meaning of that name either. But it was all right. It was a lot better than Lydia. But by the time my younger sister came around, my mom had gotten her dander up, and she used Patrice anyway. So my younger sister is Patrice, but Mom tempered it. Grandma Hazel's husband, my granddad Hildy, my granddad Hampton, was Carl, and his son was Carl. So to mollify Grandma Hazel, Patrice is Patrice Carlene. So Grandma could not complain about that name. My mom got her way, but she knew not to mess too much with Grandma. Grandma Hazel was not to be dealt with too harshly. So, but I was always glad that I didn't get the name that I thought would have been ugly, even though Grandma Odell was precious to me. So Jabez didn't want his evil name, the name that he didn't want it to describe him, even if everyone assumed he already was that pain. He thought and he wondered if he had to be that person. And he learned as he grew about God's plan for the worshipers of Yahweh, and especially there in Canaan. He learned that God's people were to grow and become more influential. Their power, their influence was to expand. And so he realized that God had a different plan for him than simply pain. He knew God didn't intend for him to be an evil man. He didn't intend for him to be a hated man. He was meant to be a conqueror through God. Not a conqueror for God, but a conqueror through God. Romans 8:37 talks about that. It says, we are more than conquerors. How? Through him, yes, through God. We are more than conquerors through him who loved us all. So God is the doer there. We cooperate with him as his tools, not as we mentioned in the Sabbath school class, not as his managers. We don't manage God. God manages us. But many people confuse this. They try to manage God rather than submitting to him. And then when God, who isn't manageable by us, doesn't seem to cooperate, doesn't do as these people expect, they fire him. The problem is, they can't find anybody to take his place. God is God. And so to be blessed as Jabez requested, we also need to let God be in control of our lives. You remember that originally the Hebrews were to come into Israel, they were to conquer and drive out all the inhabitants of Palestine. They were to do this by trusting and obeying God alone. If you want to look with me in Exodus chapter 23, we can look at that. Chapter 23 of the book of Exodus, starting with verse 22. As the Israelites were trusted and obeyed God, God would bless them. Starting in verse 22, I'll be reading a number of verses there. You can follow along. But if you indeed obey his voice and do all that I speak, then I will be an enemy to your enemies and an adversary to your adversaries. For my angel will go before you and bring you in to the Amorites and the Hittites and the Perizzites and the Canaanites and the Hivites and the Jebusites, and I will cut them off. You shall not bow down to their gods, nor serve them, nor do according to their works, but you shall utterly overthrow them and completely break down their sacred pillars. So you shall serve the Lord your God, and he will bless your bread and your water. And I will take sickness away from the midst of you. No one shall suffer miscarriage or be barren in your land. I will fulfill the number of your days. I will send my fear before you. I will cause confusion among all the people for whom you come, to whom you come, and will make all your enemies turn their backs to you. And I will send hornets before you, which shall drive out the Hivite, the Canaanite, and the Hittite from before you. I will not drive them out from before you in 1 year, lest the land become desolate and the beasts of the field become too numerous for you. Little by little, I will drive them out from before you until you have increased and you inherit the land. And I will set your bounds from the Red Sea to the sea, Philistia, and from the desert to the river, that's the Euphrates River. For I will deliver the inhabitants of the land into your hand, and you shall drive them out before you. You shall make no covenant with them, nor with their gods. They shall not dwell in your land, lest they make you sin against me. For if you serve their gods, it will surely be a snare to you. So God made some pretty wonderful promises there of blessing. And Jabez came to understand this. In his day, all around him, all around his people, were Israel, still group, but in surrounding areas and here and there in pockets, there were still indigenous people who were not willing to worship God. These were to leave the land, and God's people were to take it over. And as the generations passed and more land was needed by the growing population of Israel, God would give it to the people by driving out these other people. God would do it, and not necessarily by using strength or military might of his followers. Jabez seems to have been fascinated with this concept, internalizing it. In a time when it says in the book of Judges that every man did what was right in his own eyes, Jabez made a different choice. We don't know what quality of men his brothers grew to be. We only know, according to the scripture that was read this morning, that Jabez was more honorable. He was one of the special men who made a deliberate choice, a deliberate decision, not to do what was expected of him, not to live in a past that wasn't his fault or his choice. He chose to trust God. When he understood what his true destiny as a child of God should be, it must have been like the sun coming out after many dark and dreary days. He had hope and a glorious future, not a pain-filled one. The painmaker could actually participate in making God's people a great nation. It changed everything for him. You might say he was converted. He had a new life to live. And he chose God's destiny for him rather than the one that his mother had envisioned, deciding to follow God into fulfillment of all that God had promised to his people, to his followers. He knew he was called to it, and he became blessed indeed. We're not sure whether Jabez was actually a son of Abraham. Abraham was called of God to the promised land and was promised to become a great nation. Jabez was a Kenite, probably a descendant of Moses' brother-in-law. Remember, Moses' brother-in-law was invited to accompany the Israelites to Canaan. The Canaanites had historically worshipped Yahweh, and Jabez knew that his Kenite people then, as followers of God and as a people group that accompanied the Hebrews into Canaan, were included in God's plan. So although these people of Moses' wife were historically nomadic, he wanted the blessing that God had given to Israel. He apparently wanted a more settled lifestyle and existence where his descendants could be more secure. So, and you might want to, as I talk about this, you might want to go back and look again at the scripture, 1 Corinthians chapter 4, and verse 10, I'll read this again, what Serena read to us earlier. Jabez called on the God of Israel, saying, "Oh, that you would bless me indeed and enlarge my territory, that your hand would be with me and that you would keep me from evil, that I may not cause pain." So God granted him what he requested. So Jabez wanted to leave off the nomadic life that was typical for the Kenites, and he wanted a more settled life for his descendants. Caleb, remember, a spy for Israel during the time in the wilderness, he was another Kenite who chose to trust God. And he also, if you remember, received an enlarged territory as a reward for his faithfulness. His descendants became settled, owning land. Jabez knew that like all of God's children, he had a calling and promises. And his prayer was simply the request to be and do exactly what God had promised, what God had said the people of God should do, they could do, and they would do. He wanted to be blessed and have his territory enlarged for God. It's very different than what happened to the tribe of Dan. If you remember, when you read from the book of Judges, you see that the Danites had a hard time conquering the area that they had been assigned. And so a large group of them actually left there and went wandering around until they found a different place, actually outside of the land that God had at that point assigned for Israel. It was part of the promise, but it wasn't what he had given them at that point. And there's no evidence that God was leading these Danites in what they did. In fact, in the process, they took on a new idol and never returned to faithful worship to God. In fact, they were very influential in leading the 10 tribes into idol worship that eventually caused that whole people group to be lost. Jabez didn't want this. He wanted God's blessing. As Caleb was a great influence for good and was rewarded, Jabez wanted the same. He chose to trust and to obey God. His prayer became, "I may not have been blessed by my parents, but you, God, bless me indeed. May your hand and strength guide me. Give me enough land for my children to live well on, as you promised, by driving out those who hate you. Make my family and belongings fulfill your plan for us and honor your name. May your hand be with me as you promised, and in the process, please keep me from evil and from causing pain to others." Now, your translation, the Bible you have in front of you, may have a little bit different translation of the last phrase. Where it's of the prayer, where in this version it says that I may not cause pain. Some of you may have translations that say that I may not experience pain or something along that line. Now, I'm not any kind of a linguistic Hebrew scholar, so I can't argue what the actual meaning of what was in the prayer is. I can't argue on that. But looking at it reasonably, I think that we can take this translation. We can know that Jabez is asking to honor God. He's not praying a selfish prayer. He's wanting to honor God. He's trusting God and wanting to be what God means him to be. He's not saying, "Make me rich and don't let me have problems in life." He's asking to fulfill God's plan, which is never selfish. And he's asking to be able to depend on God for it. We can't fulfill God's plan for us, his call to us, independent. It's all dependent on God. Jesus taught us to pray, "Keep me from evil," keep us from evil, just like Jabez prayed. In the Lord's Prayer, what does it say? Lead us not into temptation and deliver us from evil. Yes. And in 2 Thessalonians 3:3, God promises, "The Lord is faithful, who will establish you and guard you from the evil one." And in 2 Timothy 4:18, there it reads, "The Lord will deliver me from every evil work and preserve me for his heavenly kingdom." So that whole concept of what Jabez was praying was to honor God. It wasn't to protect himself. Does that mean we won't experience any pain or experience any evil? No, we live in this world, but we can avoid causing undue pain as we trust in God and depend on him. When my late husband and I were called from the Altiplano in Peru to the jungle in the Amazon area, we had an experience somewhat similar. The plan was that the young people of the jungle could come to the school Ed was assigned to build, and they could learn trades along with their secondary education and go back to their villages to become community leaders and witnesses for God. The property that the church owned was rural farming property, and when we got out there, we found that there were a number of other people living on that property. That's not unusual in that culture. In fact, when we first went to work in Peru, we were told by Peruvians, "Don't let anyone come and visit you and stay too long in your house." because they can then think and actually argue in court that that they have rights to that house. So let them visit, fine, but encourage them to move on. So these people had been living some time on the school property, and it was a struggle for Ed to figure out what to do about that. He thought and he prayed and he thought and he prayed over how to resolve this so that the school property would be cleared and available for the school to be built. And as he prayed, he found a solution. He went to the mission and he asked for authorization to buy a quantity of corrugated roofing material. And with that roofing material, he could go and visit the people that lived there on the land. Several different little, they were practically huts. They were little houses built from materials that could be found on the land. And largely little one-room or two-room dwelling places. And Ed went to each one, and he talked to them. And he pointed out that the church had documented legal ownership of the land. So if the church decided to take them to court, ultimately it was almost definitely, almost sure that the church would win. And in the process, these people's names would be in the press and in a negative light. It would hurt their reputation. Of course, he didn't mention how much the church's reputation would be smeared as well in that process. But he didn't want the church's name drugged through the mud there in that neighborhood or in the nearby town where the courts were and so on. But he talked to these people. They would eventually have to leave. They'd have to start all over someplace else. They didn't have money to buy land. So what would they do? So Ed offered them the opportunity to leave freely, and he would give them enough roofing material to cover their next place. They would never have to thatch a roof again. So if they would leave calmly and quietly, they could find another place to live, rebuild their house, and it would be more permanent. They would actually be better off than they were where they were living. And, you know, everybody just picked up and moved. Painless. Nobody was caused pain, either those people or the church. And everybody found themselves feeling blessed. Better houses for the people, and the church didn't have to go through the time and hassle and finances, the economic loss of a court case. And that's the kind of thing that Jabez wanted. He didn't want to cause pain. We don't know exactly how Jabez's prayer was answered, but the Bible does say that God fulfilled Jabez's request. We don't know. Maybe hornets came and drove people out off of the land that Jabez got. Maybe they heard something like has happened since. We know about where there was noise in the trees and people left, or they heard marching and left. There were a lot of things that God did to clear land for his people or to get rid of enemies for God's people. And maybe he did that for Jabez. We don't know. But we do know that God has 1,000 ways to answer prayers, and we don't need to worry about it. He'll take care of it. We do know that Jabez became settled, and he got his territory. If you want to verify that, you can look back in chapter 2 of that same book, 1 Chronicles 2, and let's see here. Where do I have the verses written down? I'm not seeing it here, but talks about Caleb. I'm sorry, I don't have the verses in an obvious way to me here marked out. But it talks about the town of Jabez and the people who lived there. 54, thank you, Kathy. Yes. 55, the families of the scribes who dwelt at Jabez, and it goes on about them, different sub-clans of that group. So that whole section became God's gift to Jabez in fulfillment of his Jabez's prayer. God expanded his territory physically and spiritually. His hand was with Jabez, and he was kept from evil. His descendants were able to do good. They were scribes. They were able to help people keep the law, not just spiritually, but other laws as well. They were able to read and write and take care of correspondence for people. They were just plain a blessing. Jabez's prayer was answered. God blessed him indeed. So now we're left to ask, what is our calling? And are we fulfilling it? Are we answering God's call? Are you stuck in some childhood prophecy that's never been resolved, some insecure self-doubt? I still ask myself those questions from time to time. And I think about the verse in 2 Peter 1:10 that says, "Be diligent to make your call and election sure. Know what you're called to by God and make sure that you definitely choose it." The promise there says, "For if you do these things, you will never stumble. You'll never go wrong." Most of the Israelites ended up fulfilling Jesus' words that many were called, but few were chosen. And that's the sad thing. They lived in the promised land, but as the population increased, they were more and more crowded and with fewer and fewer resources rather than expanding. And in fact, the only time that the children of Israel actually fulfilled God's prophecy of the huge territory they were to have was during the time of David and Solomon. And even then, the people were not cleared out. They were simply conquered. So the kings received the taxes off that land, but the people of Israel weren't able to live in that land. So by not accepting God's call, not trusting him, they failed. We don't have to do that. Regardless of what part of our life we're in, we can still answer God's call. We can still follow him and choose to do as he asks us to. We can be like Jabez, blessed. We can believe, we can pray, and we can fulfill the destiny. You probably remember the little book that was so popular a number of years ago called The Prayer of Jabez. Many people read it, and it seemed to me that many people misunderstood it. I heard people talking about praying the prayer of Jabez, and it seemed that their interpretation was that God was going to make them rich, and that God would expand their territory, their power, their wealth. And that's not what Jabez was apparently about at all. He wanted to be good. He wanted to not have evil. He wanted to not cause pain. He wanted to honor God. And that is always right. We shouldn't forget to be honorable in praying Jabez's prayer, if that's what we decide to do. So what is God's call for us today? If you look in Matthew 28, the last two verses, what do they tell us is our call? Matthew 28, verses 19 and 20. Thank you, Ralph. Yes, we are called to enlarge the territory, to call people into God's nation. The process, though, is not exactly dictated to us. There are many ways of going about that. It's individual, and that's the call that you need to talk to God about. And I see time is passing, so I'll move on down here. But I do want to make a couple of suggestions. If you're not sure how God wants you to fulfill that call, you can look in two chapters to get started. Matthew 25, where it talks about the judgment scene between the sheep and the goats, and Isaiah 58, where it talks about the true fast. Both of those are always right. You will never go wrong if you fulfill a call in those ways. And from there, as you work with God in those roles, he will open your path on how more you can have your territory increased for God. When you are honorable, when you honor God, he will certainly bless you indeed.